All right, we got Mr. 78 on the line. I don't want to make him, you know, sit there and wait and hold. He's got, he's probably on the range right now working on a short game. Here's James Duthie. How you doing, JD?
Just arrived at the building. My my focus has switched to the art of broadcasting now.
Okay.
July is over.
Yes. So you're back in business, and you're covering a Leaf game that is deja vu. I mean, how do you set up a game tonight when you consider that game last night and how everything played out?
I was eagerly anticipating listening to you guys today because of that exact thing. Did Sheldon Keefe, I know I'm not the first to use the word, but was it Keefe on the West Coast trip earlier this year that used the word immature to describe
the team? Yeah, I think he did, yep.
Yeah, I really think that's the best word to describe them. And that doesn't mean, like, it's not immature in the sense that they're in the hotel hallways of the bubble playing mini sticks or something. It's just immature in a hockey sense of how to deal with those situations, and they've shown it time and time again the last few years. Now, in the early years, I think that's common, but you can't really, and, you know, maturity doesn't always come with age. You don't suddenly become mature just because you're in your fifth year in the league or your sixth year in the league. Or you're 40 years old or 50 years old, because numerous people in our station, including numerous people on this call, including myself, would probably still be immature, right?
Yeah, right.
But from a hockey sense, that is to me just the best way that every time they get in a situation like that, you don't do that. You don't have control of a series and lead 3-0 and lose that way unless you're immature. Now, the bright spot is that sometimes maturity can happen overnight or over a couple of games. They win this one and the next one, and boom, it's a different hockey team. It's like Tom Hanks in Big there, where you find the Zoltar machine, and then you're a little kid, and the next day you wake up and you're sleeping with Elizabeth Perkins, right? So that stuff can happen, but it's, you know, until they do it, then that's the way you have to label them. And
it's the timing of it, James. It's like, why were you mature the first half of the game? You're up 3-0, and then why did you become immature?
You weren't mature. You were just what? Talented, I think. I really think.
Oh, so
think
when they're playing really good, they're just talented?
No, I think what James is saying, like, maybe I'll paraphrase, but, like, the game was quite easy for them. Like, they were imposing their will.
Maybe they were playing well enough that it looked easy for them. That's what happens when a team's talented and they're playing well. It looks easy. But then it's just a choking type situation where you can't pull it together when it really matters and they're critical situations. And you all of a sudden become immature. I don't know.
Yeah, it's selective immaturity. That's the issue, James, I think, is they're not immature when they're up 3-0. Then they're immature. You know, when they bounce back in game two, and it's this whole franchise has been immature for 15 years. You know, some might argue 50 years. You know, what's going to happen is they're going to get mature and they'll be too mature, too old. Now they got to turn it over.
Yeah, you know, these guys are grizzled. These guys are blue hairs. We got to get them out of here.
That's the concern.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. Like I said, you can't just sit and wait and suddenly expect them to be 25 and 26. They're not a young team anymore. Like the NHL, once guys are in their third or fourth year, you can't call them, you can't say this bunch of kids. Like, you keep hearing that sometimes. They have all these talented young forwards. Well, they're not really that young anymore in the NHL contender manner of speaking. And so I know you guys have probably talked about this, and if they lose, you'll be talking about it in the days to come. But, well, you know, how long is this it? If you say that, if that's the conclusion, if they lose, that this
conclusion
group,
of what?
For whatever reason, collectively is immature, then is that it? Or do you write off this season as a freakish short series and a weird year and give them one more, you know, in general, one more kick at the can? I'm not sure you do.
No, but adjustments have to be made. And you know, think of all the years that the overdrive of Washington, the overdrive of St. Louis, where these teams were perennial, like, you know, built to go deep into the playoffs. I'm not suggesting the Leafs are there yet, because I think they're a defensive core. The way they're structured is very top heavy. There still has to be some tinkering by Kyle and some draft and development. Like, that's coming. But they're better than this right now. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think nobody would argue.
And they win
these
two games, it's all, you know, exactly. All this stuff is forgotten, as it often happens. You go back and look at all the Stanley Cup winners from the last probably decade or for history of time, and somewhere along the way in the playoffs, for the most part, you know, they faced some sort of situation where they were down in the series and it looked bleak, and they found a way. So, you know, at some point you either find a way or it's not working.
Well, and the concern, I think, for the Leafs, and I'm hesitant. We're putting the cart before the horse. They still play tonight. They could win. Then they win Sunday. It just, the history of this team should probably set you up for that not to happen. But, again, stranger things have happened. We'll see.
I think tonight's the most dangerous game, by the way. I think if they win tonight, they're going to win Sunday. Win Sunday by two or three goals. I really think that. I don't think it's a Boston situation, like Game 7 pressure and all that. I think tonight, I think they're a little shell-shocked from last night, and it's a 20-hour turnaround. I really think if they win tonight, they're going to win on Sunday.
Well, again, the trends would indicate Columbus, Toronto, but at some point you got to believe something is going to break through. I do think they have played relatively well over three games. You know, like they went to sleep halfway through the game last night. In game one, they were good. They weren't great, but neither team was great. I think they were both kind of easing into the series, and Columbus got them. They played really well in game two, really, really well early into the game yesterday. So, tonight was such a quick turnaround. Freddie Anderson going back-to-back, that's tough, but he's got to show up. I think what is likely going to be concerning for a lot of these GMs, not only the Leafs, you know, Pittsburgh would be included in this, Edmonton would be included in this, is with the salary cap now being flat for a number of years, you're kind of stuck with who you got. You know, like, you better believe that you're well on your way. And I would think those GMs likely do believe in that. Like, I would think in Pittsburgh they should, based on their history and who they've got. In Edmonton, they've got two of the top five players in the world. That's a pretty good start. In the Leafs core, I think you have to have faith in, you should, like with Matthews, mm-hmm. who's been great, and Marner and Tavares and Nylander and Riley. But if it's beyond that, if it's not just those first five or six guys, it's the rest of the team that you've got to make sure that you address or you're uncertain on, it's just very difficult to tinker post-COVID, and it probably will be for the next two or three years. You know, it's just going to be very difficult to make drastic changes to the periphery of your lineup.
And don't you think that's hard every year? Like, you get really good teams that, you know, add a couple of, maybe make a couple of depth free agent signings and make a couple of moves at the deadline that on our 19 panels on Trade Center that we applaud as nice pieces, and then it just never really works. And then you get other teams who kind of make these little fourth line, third line, sixth, seventh defenseman moves under the radar, and suddenly you're a Stanley Cup champion and you never know. Frankly, I think half the time it's guesswork for the GMs too, right? They're not sure how guys are going to work and how it's all going to fit together. But if they go out this year, then the puzzle didn't fit. And you got to start again with what you say. The rebuilding every year is rebuilding at the bottom of the lineup. That's the new way, right?
Yeah.
That's what a rebuild is now.
And that should be easier. It is easier. Yeah, like, I'd rather be in this position than Detroit, where you're like, mm-hmm. I got to find a couple of superstars. Like, I got to find a number one, a number two, a number one defenseman, a number one goalie. You'd rather be Edmonton, Toronto, Pittsburgh, where you've found it, and they're mature and they're in their prime. It is difficult to work around the edges, or it likely will be, because the salary cap is going to be so flat.
But are they mature? You see, I brought the conversation full circle.
Right, full circle. There you go.
Well, that's why you're the best in the business, buddy. It's a good point. And are you tracking the PGA Championship as you're doing?
I have been.
What did you shoot there? I saw this pick you took. You played there, apparently. What did you fire there?
You
Let me guess. 73.
I seriously don't remember. I think I played it. I went on my Golf Canada app, and they have this new Golf Canada app, and I can't get it to go back far enough to say. I think I played pretty well. I didn't find it hard. You'll see when the listeners watch it on the weekend, there's these giant trees that have been there forever. But it's not like a tree-lined course in the sense that you're losing balls in the woods or whatever. The trees are massive, but they're all separated, so it might be a punch-out day if you're not hitting it straight. I was just watching Ricky and DeChambeau doing that the last few holes. But it's a very, it's a very playable course. It's a really cool experience. I went on the day off between game 3 and 4 of the NBA Finals with the Raptors. Blackie was supposed to go with me, Rod Black, and didn't. So I went by myself. I took a cab there, no clubs. I walked into the pro shop at 4 o'clock. They said the last tee time was 4:10, and so you were hooped because it was taken. And some guy happened to be a Canadian in the pro shop who was living down there working for some tech firm who recognized me and said, hey, we only got three.
What?
You want to come out?
Wow.
And it was just this perfect San Francisco
wow.
day, you know, cool with the sun going down. It was a really, really fun, really fun track. You're right on the bay. The water is only in play like about three holes, but I like it because if you spray it, you can punch out and have a shot. I don't think you lose a ball the entire track. But again, they've probably narrowed the fairways and grown the rough about 5 inches long. But it was a really, really enjoyable golf course.
So it looks
cool, really
right?
Looking forward to watching.
What
it
happens
this
if you hit a skank ball and you can't get it airborne after that?
I don't do that. Oh,
no, your money, you're dialed off the tee. I've seen it. I've witnessed.
It's not going to happen,
Mr. 78. Yeah, I'll put you down for a 79 at Harding Park.
A wedge from 70 yards out the fairway.
Yeah,
that's Jimmy, a different shot. Look, buddy, let's just straighten this out right now. I admit that I hit three or four shots that were a joke. I'm the better player for our team. I need to make those shots. But I think for 15 of the 18th holes, I did my job. And you put yourself in a situation you couldn't get it airborne for 9 holes.
That is not the truth.
Dude, think about your tee balls. They were all crop dusting, worm burning, dive bombing hunks of crap.
I was spectacular off the tee for like 11 holes.
That's what I'm saying. After that, tell me one good shot you hit after the skank.
I came on the show, I think. I took the heat for the loss. Even on social media, I said, you know, oh, play great. I'm taking the heat.
I know what it is.
There wasn't a tweet out of you about, you know, when you were like putting from the fringe and putted it 6 inches and left it in the fringe, a 30-footer. I didn't hear that.
I've got the answer. James, you're an immature golfer. That's it's the maturity level. That's what it is.
My immaturity.
You showed your immaturity.
Well, you guys were up by like 5, weren't you? Forget a 3-0 lead. You guys.
But here's the thing: like it was a choke job, I'm sure. But at the same time, I don't really have that much talent, so I will do that in the middle of a round sometimes, period, where I'll go 6 holes and play terrible. I'm like the streakiest because I'm not talented enough. I'm the first to admit that.
Well,
O has talent, so he has no excuse.
You guys will get him next year. I'm
no,
certain of it.
No, me and
Dubas
you
and Jerry do. Yeah, we'll figure it out. It was a great event. It's a great track. 3 tracks up there.
And it was a big match yesterday with the first up team.
We got a break, pal.
Holy Akavo and Karolnik and Jeff McDonald. You don't want to hear about that?
Who won?
Okay, give us a quick little rundown of that.
I'll just say the radio boss, Jeff McDonald, was very strong. I was impressed with his game. There was some high drama. I knocked in like a 40-footer, and then Holy Akavo put it in on top of me. Karolnik made a big birdie putt. It was, you know what? There was a lot more. It was a very amiable halved match. But I did lip out on 18, so you can say I choked again there. Oh, but a 4-footer.
So who are the teams? You and Jeff McDonald versus those two?
You see, we played them last year, and then we completely destroyed them. And so all they've been talking about is revenge all year. Off we went, but it was some brilliance at Coppinwood.
All right. Well,
nice.
we'll make sure to track who you're playing in the future, and you'll get a win one of these days, and so will the Leafs. I'll bet you it'll coincide.
I'm sure your listeners are just riveted by it.
Everyone's
riveted.
Really excited.
Aaron Karolnik golf updates.
Yeah, I can't wait. I heard it this morning. I was in the car. These guys are talking about their putts. I'm like, do you guys realize that the Leafs melted last night? Like, let's go here. And now we're talking about it. We're talking about their show's material. We got to go here.
Exactly.
We're moving on.
Bye, guys.
We'll talk later. There's James Duthie from TSN.
Yeah, we go from yelling and screaming to talking about producer shots.
Yeah, not even our own producer.
Let's get it back on the rails here.
Right. Like if the grappler, you know, sprays one all over Coppinwood or something, we might talk about it, but we're not talking about Karolnik's game.
Al's brother. Yeah, let's pull it together here.